The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
So, nightlife returns tomorrow night. Clubs and events can be open. But to do what? Well, you might think that given the announcement was made on Tuesday about the next phase of the reopening of society, that would have all been thought out and planned and announced and the rest of it. But it wasn't. And then there were supposed to be meetings this afternoon, starting at 3 o'clock, and they were put off to 4 o'clock, and they were put off to 5 o'clock. And I believe the 5 o'clock one hasn't actually started yet either. Shane Dunn, as an event producer and promoter, what do you make of that?
It's been a week of a tailspin, Matt. And, you know, if anything or if nothing else, it's just getting worse, really. You know, we're, I suppose I should caveat it with, we've had lots of calls this week with people in the Department of Culture who are, you know, I think really trying. I think probably that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, I think, are in Brussels today is, you know, probably not helping with the communication of getting what's allegedly being proposed signed off. But, you know, for people who've been out of work for coming up on 600 days, who, you know, 2 weeks ago were told 20 seconds on track, you know, reopening, you know, we even had a senior NPHET member do a full press run and tell us the virus was as good as suppressed. So I think everybody doubled down at that point, you know, invested in the 22nd of what was going to happen. You know, bands invested in tours, venues invested in kit and getting staff back, getting people off the PUP. So Tuesday was devastating. Then we've been, you know, whirlwind of emotion that maybe it's not going to be, you know, as bad. Maybe things are going to improve. Maybe there'll be some level of standing allowed. We thought we might get that yesterday. Then it was this morning. Then it was 3 o'clock meeting, as you've said, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock, you know, it's a bit of...
What's your understanding for what... I mean, just for example, I mean, I don't know whether you're involved in any way with Cork Jazz Festival, which is on this week. And you have to get off the train in Mallow and take a bus into Cork if you're not driving yourself there, but that's another issue. But if people go to events like the Cork Jazz Festival, are they all going to have to be sort of seated in tables of four if they're going to watch performances?
No. So I suppose like what was announced on Tuesday was that there was no upper limit on capacity anymore, but everybody had to be seated. So, you know, as long as there was not a mixed, what they're calling mixed immunity. So as long as everybody was providing a vaccination pass, you know, you didn't require the pods of four and the pods of six. I suppose the problem with that for our sector is that a lot of the gigs at the Jazz, a lot of the gigs that, you know, myself or, you know, other promoters have sold between now and the end of the year or February, as it looks, these restrictions would be in place until, are sold to full standing. So, you know, if you take, as an example, the Olympia Theatre is 1,200 capacity seated, 1,600 capacity with full standing. You know, what do you do with those 400 people who've bought a ticket standing to go to those gigs, you know, over the next, so all those gigs are going to end up being cancelled.
Is that because financially they can't work on the basis of just the 1,200? To make them work, it has to be 1,600 people?
No, not necessarily. But the problem is that they've been sold to 1,600. So how do you pick the 400 people who now can't go, you know, short of putting everybody into some kind of, you know, squid game between here and the gig, you know.
Steady on. You might give some people ideas.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation. Like, there are obviously, you know, financial implications for being able to sell 1,200 tickets as opposed to 1,600 tickets. If you're doing it from the start, you can potentially work those out. When they're already sold, and I give you an even, I suppose, a better, Jazz is a great example, and even maybe a better example is this Wexford Spiegeltent Festival this weekend, which starts tomorrow night. You know, the promoter there is invested now, because 2 weeks ago he was told this is all going to happen. So he's built his site, he's built his tent, he's paid for his toilets, he's paid for his power, sound, lights. It's all in. He's now financially committed. And then on Tuesday, the rug was pulled out from under him. So, and he, again, he sold the bulk of those shows. Like tomorrow night, he's got the Corona, same on Saturday night. I think it's 900 capacity, full standing. He has nowhere to go now. If that doesn't happen, if he can't do 900 full standing tomorrow night, he has to cancel the gig. All of his financial commitment still has to pay for his tent, still has to pay his rent, still has to pay, you know, everything he's put in, and, you know, would be under huge financial pressure at a time where he's now already 20 months into a pandemic where he's been unable to earn money, you know. So it's not like he's got a cash reserve to suffer something like this. And I think, you know, the likes of the Jazz and all these, and this goes right through to small venues, you know, who've taken staff back off the PUP, who've, you know, had people in to get the PA, the sound, the lights, everything ready for the weekend. And if they can't do it, you know, there's no doubt we will see more businesses lost, more people who now can't go back onto the PUP as far as we're aware. It's just a disaster, or will be a disaster, if we don't get, you know, some level of clarification.
Do you have
quickly.
Any sympathy for the public health experts who are looking at a situation whereby They're seeing the numbers with COVID climbing again. They're worried about the hospitals, and they fear that if you have people congregating in nightclubs and at events where they may have drink taken, that that could end up being the sort of super spreader events that they fear.
Yeah, of course, man. Look, you know, we work in live events. You know, we build, you know, cities in a week or two. You know, the safety of the people that come to our events is something that, you know, we take very seriously. We're one of the most overseen industries going. You know, to get an event license for over 5,000 people, you know, you have to have sign off from the HSC, TII, the council, the Gardaí, the fire officer, you know, the fire brigade. Like, it's very, very, you know, legislated, a very, very legislated industry. So we know all of this, and absolutely. And look, everything in this pandemic has moved quickly. You know, it's moved exceptionally quickly. Things change. We know that. What we've been asking for right from the start was a government that would move as quickly, you know, that would be proactive in trying to help our sector. And, you know, you look at it the other day on Tuesday, you had all of these, and, you know, Micheál Martin was great to reuse and reuse the word anomaly. But, like, the anomalies were striking. You know, they were absolutely, you know, when you looked at it on Tuesday as someone in government, you must have gone, we can't announce this. You know, and they did anyway, which was that, you know, you could potentially have 1,000 people on dance floors unmasked in nightclubs around the country, in the bigger nightclubs, but you couldn't have 300 people standing on the floor of Whelan's watching a gig. Now, nobody is disagreeing that we are still in a pandemic. Of course we are. There are, I think, 86 people in ICU. We get that. But what we're asking for is a level playing field, you know, as people in the industry, if other sectors, and I think as in our sector as live events, I think we're, you know, we have been left to last, you know, right through this. You know, we are the most, you know, restricted sector in Ireland, in a country that has had the strongest lockdowns probably in Europe. So, you know, we've had a very, as a lot of people have, a lot of businesses have, but a very rough 19 coming on 20 months now. We want to open. We want to do it as safely as we can within the guidance given by government. And that's what we're waiting for.
Thank you very much, Shane Dunn, event producer and promoter, for being with us. Priscilla Lynch, clinical editor of the Medical Independent, is with us as well. Priscilla, the first thing I want to ask you about is the announcement today in relation to maternity restrictions at our hospitals, a source of enormous controversy and indeed deep upset for many women and their partners over the last year.
Yeah, that's right. At today's HSC briefing, they confirmed that from the 1st of November, all maternity services can provide access for a nominated support partner to access inpatient areas during normal visiting hours. That's 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. So that basically means that partners of pregnant women can attend with them for their, you know, for their regular scheduled appointments in the hospital, unscheduled appointments, and at all stages, really, I suppose, of labour and of those particular scans that they want accompanied by. So that's been very welcome, obviously, today from the 1st of November. But I think pregnant women are still quite worried that even though we know that restrictions have been relaxed over the last number of months, that some hospitals aren't actually adhering to those and that there still is restrictions there. And some women have complained about labouring alone pretty much up until the later stages of their labour. So I think there's still a bit of apprehension about whether they will be fully followed. The hospitals themselves have pointed out that their you know, key concern is trying to keep babies and women safe at all stages, but that they have looked at pilots for operating this particular system and it seems to have gone well. So they said fingers crossed that they will be able to go ahead very successfully with this, that it should apply to all maternity units across the country.
Now, you said the HSE briefing, what was it saying about those in ICU and those in hospitals and the breakdown between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it wasn't a very positive briefing today from the HSE. It really was an overview of the increasing pressure on our hospital services and the increasing number of COVID-19 cases in the community, which are now growing by about 2 to 3% per day. That there's a very high demand for testing at about nearly 150,000 tests per week, and that positivity is high at about 9.6% overall and higher in some community sites. So looking at the hospital situation, there's 448 people in hospitals across the country with COVID-19 currently, and that's a number that has been increasing steadily in the last couple of weeks. Currently there's 88 people with COVID-19 in ICU. That's over 30% of our current ICU capacity, which was very worrying according to Paul Reid, because according to NPHET calculations, if case numbers continue to rise as they are, by the end of November we could see 150 to 200 people in ICU with COVID-19, which would mean having obviously cancellations of operations and possibly having to go into surge capacity. Now, looking at the ICU numbers today, of those 88, about 52% are not vaccinated, 5% are partially vaccinated, and 41% are fully vaccinated.
Sorry, that's a large number of fully vaccinated, isn't it? A lot of people are wondering about that.
Yeah, so that's fair enough. I suppose people are wondering, well, that seems like a high enough number. But if you look at the 80 people who are in ICU with COVID-19 and 41% are fully vaccinated, those who are fully vaccinated, the majority of those have a significant underlying health condition and are much older. So they are saying that the vaccines are still largely working. And if it's 52% of people in ICU that are not vaccinated, compared to less than 10% of the adult population who are not vaccinated at the moment, that's a disproportionate amount, because the adult population in Ireland, 92.4% of those are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, which is one of the highest uptakes of the COVID-19 vaccine in the world. But obviously people are dismayed at the current high numbers of over 2,000 cases per day of COVID-19, and obviously the increasing pressure on our hospital system, and are asking obviously why, because we do know there has been an increased number of people who are fully vaccinated who are testing positive in the last couple of months. But thankfully, as the HSE said, the majority of those are experiencing milder cases of COVID-19 than would be expected. They pointed out that as well, that given the current numbers that we have in the community, if people were unvaccinated, we would see our hospital services completely overwhelmed at this stage.
All right. Thank you very much, Priscilla Lynch, Clinical Editor of the Medical Independent. Dara Loughlin, General Secretary of the Irish Pharmacies Union, is with us as well. Because just want to check, Dara, what's the position with your members, with pharmacists, giving booster shots to the vaccine?
At this stage, we don't honestly know. We know that NIAC has given its advice to government, and we know government has authorised a booster vaccination program for anybody aged 60 or older, and that, as far as we can make out, it is their intention that that would be delivered by GPs and in the remaining mass vaccination centres. But
hang on, what about the people
reports,
who've already gone to pharmacies to get their first shots? Would it not be logical then that they go to the same place for their third?
I would say it's completely logical. I think it is illogical that pharmacies that are still currently vaccinating against COVID wouldn't be part of any COVID booster program. But from what we've seen published of the HSE's plans, there is no inclusion of pharmacies at this stage, which makes no sense.
And sorry, Dara, aren't you also doing the flu vaccine for many people?
Yes, we're very busy with the flu vaccine.
So wouldn't
it
be logical then to have people, when they're getting their flu vaccine, to get their booster shot off you at the same time?
Yes, and NIAC has given their clinical advice that it's absolutely appropriate to get your booster shot and your flu jab at the same time. There's no clinical risk or health risk in terms of getting those two together. In fact, it makes sense.
Okay, and what sort of response are you getting from the HSE and the government to requests for information as to whether you can get involved?
No clarity at all, no firm clarity. There is an IT system designed and built and owned by the HSE that we use for recording vaccines, and it doesn't even have the capacity to record a booster dose administered in a pharmacy. It's a small IT change that should have been done, that could have been done, that could have been rolled out. That's not in place. We've no protocols for pharmacies. We know they've written out to GPs to tell them that they have to booster vaccinate any of their over 70-year-old patients. We can see GPs out in the national media today saying they don't have the capacity to take on the booster campaign right now. We're coming into a winter season and they just don't have the resources. We know that the 320,000 COVID vaccine doses administered in pharmacies in the last couple of months, pharmacies are still administering those, even though we've got 92.5% of adults vaccinated. There are still people coming forward and pharmacies are vaccinating them. So it seems entirely illogical that for people aged over 60 that they have to either make a GP's appointment or find an open vaccination centre to get their booster jab, when their local pharmacy could give it to them at the same time as their flu vaccine.
Thank you very much, Dara Loughlin from the Irish Pharmacies Union.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.